produced by the International Valuation Standards Council, the IVSC, as part of its 2020 webinar series, sponsored by BDO and BVR. You can find more information, including other podcasts in this series, at www.ivsc.org. Emerging Trends in Retail Valuation.
Hello and welcome to this webinar looking at current trends in retail property valuation as part of the IVSC's AGM this year. The moderator for the session today is Ben Elder. Ben is chair of the IVSC's Tangible Assets Board and in this role leads the board's efforts to develop and consult on international valuation standards for property assets. He's also the Global Valuation Director for the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors and oversees their work to set professional standards through the Red Book. Please note that the comments and views shared by our panel today are for the purposes of this discussion only and do not necessarily reflect the formal positions of their organisations nor the IVSC. Ben, over to you.
Thanks, Richard. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody on the call. Thank you for joining us. We've got a great panel lined up today with Nadia, Christian and Mark all prepared to share their honest views. And I'm sure that we'll get some contrasting views as we go through the process today. So I'm going to pass over to Christian now, who's going to lead the debate off with a piece of research which he's recently led for JLL. Christian, can I pass over to you?
Thank you, Ben, and hello to everybody. Yeah, so in my role, I lead the EMEA retail valuation business at JLL. And during the course of the pandemic, we went to a position quite quickly where we were seeing a lot of shopping centres shutting their doors. So a very challenging time for that sector. And as we worked through that period of initial lockdown in many markets, we were turning our attention to what reopening might look like and to try and assess perhaps the level of pain that was being felt. As we got into the summer months and after a period of reopening, a few things became clear. And that was that, although sales and footfall were starting to return in a very positive way, that obviously occupiers had felt a lot of pain on the way and a whole sort of period of renegotiation of lease terms and backdated rent was upon us really for the summer. One of the themes that kept coming out through that was this move more towards more flexible leases, a move to more turnover-based rents as a means of a fairer assessment. And we've seen throughout some European countries, legislation come in Portugal, for example, where turnover rents become the new law. So it really did thrust turnover rents into the forefront and the middle ground. So we released a paper about this and looking at the impact that would have on valuations and the wider market. And that was released in the summer. So just to summarize, to kick things off really, the move towards more turnover based rent models we see is very positive for the retail sector. Positive, certainly in the longer term. We see that there will be more collaboration required as a consequence of this between owners and operators themselves. And this will bring more transparency in many markets. Provision of sales data is not necessary, and so it can be quite opaque. And without that, there's not such a clear way to be able to measure performance and to anticipate how retailers are performing. So it's good for a performance measure as well as increasing transparency. Also, if the clauses, and we can touch upon that later, if the turnover clauses themselves are drafted correctly and in fairness to both sides, then ultimately the level of rent payable can be deemed to be fair on both sides as well, which also addresses some of the issues that occupiers are facing in some markets where they feel the rental levels have got too high. There will, as I said, be some short-term pain though, because for many schemes, coming towards a more turnover-based model will result in income falling. And that will be a short-term challenge for sure. We do see that there will be increased polarization between the best schemes and the rest as a consequence of moving more towards turnover-based models. For the very best places, that's where operators want to be. That's where retailers want to be, and they will continue to do so. And in terms of the level of rent that they would pay through turnover, the occupiers themselves can have confidence in specialist managers to deliver those schemes to increase returns in terms of sales and how footfall evolves as well. So the best in class should, in that theory, get better. But at the other end, you'll have the weakest schemes. So where you have declining footfall and declining sales, the tenants in that situation would dictate the terms more favourably than for landlords, and you could expect further falls. If you have turnover-based rent on falling sales, then naturally the income's going to fall. And at the very end of that spectrum, we would see then an increase in obsolescence, an increase in repurposing and alternative uses for those schemes that otherwise perhaps would have taken longer to fail. One size doesn't fit all, though, we must remember that. And at the moment, there are lots of conversations around different types of turnover rent models. And, you know, for large anchor stores such as grocers, it might not be something that they would necessarily want to sign up to. You also have to consider seasonality. If you have a cash flow and you're based on 100% turnover only and you're only getting income effectively half a year, that might not be to the benefit of the owner as well. There are a number of models, as I said. You have base rent plus turnover top-ups with a ratchet effect. You have 100% turnover only deals. We're seeing deals where the turnover includes all costs. So there's a whole multitude of models and potential models out there. This then in turn presents challenges for the valuation community, which I represent, but also for investors as well. You know, the question really is, initially, where is that data? If you're moving from a traditional leasing model to one where you have more turnover leases and historically there's been no requirement to provide that sales information, then you're starting from a base of not much knowledge or understanding of what the potential income would be. So that presents a real challenge to the valuation community in trying to forecast what turnover may look like. That will lead then to the increased importance of benchmarking and benchmarks and having a real understanding of the business of the shopping centre operation itself and also of the operator as well. So on the data point, if we get to that point where sales becomes linked to online and not just in-store sales, then in forecasting turnover, we're going to have to be able to take a deeper dive into the businesses themselves to understand how they operate and what will drive that. So that will be a significant challenge for the valuation community going forward as to how we do that, what the best methodology and approach would be. One thing from our perspective that is absolutely clear is that DCF methodology is the only really appropriate way to value shopping centres, especially as you move to more of an operational model with more turnover and variable rents as part of that. That also helps more global alignment. In many markets, DCF is the preferred methodology anyway, but in a number of markets, the UK included, it's still very much a direct cap approach. And in order to be able to accurately forecast and model what is a very complicated area, and set to become even more complicated, then we see DCF methodology as the only appropriate way.
Let's leap straight to the panel and see whether you actually recognise the scenarios that Christian outlined there. Can I turn to you, Mark, first of all, and ask for your views and how that impacts on your daily job and those challenges which Christian outlined?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Ben, and thanks, Christian, and thanks for having me on the panel. Real pleasure to be here. Look, this is a really timely report and a really timely piece of work by Christian, and very, very relevant for the Hammerson business. Before I kick off, I will say my role is the UK and Ireland Managing Director here at Hammerson. Clearly, as a business, we specialise in investing in city centre, retail, leisure, flagship locations with mixed-use development potential, city quarter development potential. And clearly our investment base goes beyond UK and Ireland into Europe for both flagship shopping centres, but also premium outlets business, which I think is quite relevant to this conversation we might come back to. Probably also worth, in terms of context, just noting what an extraordinarily difficult market this is right now. And it's clearly been a very challenging time for us as a business and anyone involved in owning retail assets. Hammerson over the summer were involved in a capital raise, which really was accelerated and came about due to the challenges brought on by COVID, which overlaid with the structural changes in retail, meant we had to act quickly. But at the heart of that capital raise was a strategy which is really relevant to this conversation. And that strategy is around how we look at rents, and particularly I'm going to focus this piece on the UK business, but how we look at rents and rent affordability now going forward versus how it's historically been done. And then when you think about that in the context of the valuation, in the way that Christian's just described, there's some really interesting themes emerging. The premise that we've talked about, and I've spent a lot of time speaking with investors over the past few weeks, is that we acknowledge that the lease structure, and in many ways, the valuation approach to UK shopping centres and others globally is broken. The lease structure has been historically based on long leases, certainty of income. And as a result, particularly in the UK, as we've seen a major disconnect between these long leases with ratcheted rents and what actually occupiers can afford to pay. And that's, as I say, the profitability of occupiers has been diluted through these physical stores, given their investment in omnichannel and the general pressures that they've been under globally, but again, particularly in the UK with our online penetration. So we've been very clear that that's broken. We look at our premium outlets business, we look at continental Europe, and Christian will have a pretty good view on this, as we do when we look at our French business. And we see that there is a requirement in the UK right now for a new lease model. We've been really clear about the four key elements to what that looks like, all of which are going to have an impact on valuation. The first is flexibility. And we recognize that having two-way flexibility, breaks at 3, 6, 9 mutual allows us to be able to manage these places, put the right mix of occupiers in, curate the right type of brands, and enable a kind of more risk, reduce the risk for an occupier coming in. Second, this is a really important one, is the way we think about rebasing rents, resetting rents to a level that's based not on a comparable ERV from some other unit in the center. It's based upon the affordability that occupier can pay in that store. And that depends on their type of business, their gross margins, net margins, et cetera. Importantly, though, we see that reset to a base rent, and I'm interested. We perhaps come on to the risk associated with the pure turnover rent, but in broad terms, for us, having a pure turnover rent, you're not capturing all sorts of other things that are going on with the that lead to retailers to take that store. Thirdly, we see an RPI-based increase, which again, not new. It has been new in kind of as far as these sort of locations in the UK, with no rent reviews. And then fourthly, and this is a really interesting area that in itself is subject to a whole, you could do a whole hour talking about this, is some sort of performance top-up that goes away from just turnover. And we're really exploring this and talking to our retail occupiers about what that could look like. Things like linking it to footfall in a location. That's ultimately why brands take space in these big flagship locations, because they want to get in front of people. So do we incentivize that way? So those are four elements. Retailers on the whole are supportive, and we see this as an inevitable change that's coming through. To Christian's point, I think we are fortunate in having high quality venues in these type of locations that, I think we are able to implement this change, and we see the outcome being a level of sustainable rent, taking away the uncertainty right now that's meaning these assets have been very difficult to underwrite and to value because of the perception from anyone investing as to they just don't know how to underwrite these things. We see as an ability to move away from there. Christian's talked about he sees potential reductions in value, and clearly that's an inevitable consequence of the route I've just talked about. We've been quite open about where we see rents going, where they have been, and where we ultimately see them ending up. Perhaps I can come back to that. And of course, when we got to that point, where whether it's the valuation method, which we can come back to, Christian's talked about DCF methods, but when we've got to a point where we can demonstrate that there's a solid income stream coming from an operator, and I like Christian's point about trusting good operators, coming from an operator that's got market credibility, then clearly it makes the job of the valuer more straightforward because there's a firmer yield based on that income stream. So look, in summary, I think it's very timely. It's very timely for Christian's comments and papers, very timely, very timely for us and our strategy, the evolution of us as a business, and I think the industry as a whole.
Thanks, Mark. That's great. Nadja, anything you want to add to that, and particularly thinking about your day job and what you do and challenges you need to overcome?
This is very current discussion. We've been puzzled by the retail sector and evolution of this sector. It started really more than 10 years ago in my days at CBR EGI. The risks were emerging, but definitely we have seen an acceleration lately, and even this has been even accelerated further by COVID. From an investor point of view, the challenges are really how to assess the value of the scheme, where are those right rental levels, sustainable rental levels, which schemes will be sustainable in the long run, and those, you know, that require repurposing. And I think we're pretty much at that point where we need to look at, you know, alternative values of the scheme and those that will survive, obviously, you know, where will the rental level set. More of that is coming later, I think, during this discussion. In terms of impact on valuations, we heard already that, you know, there are many different models, and turnover rents is not one single model. We have a lot of complexity, and it brings a lot of complexity to valuation. Heard already about, you know, DCF model. It's not something new. We apply this type of methodology in senior living that is much more of an operational business model. We need to think about retail as a business and how successful it is, profitability. And that's what we currently do when we invest in some of those niche segments, such as senior housing, such as student accommodation, hotels. So we can apply probably models from those segments. It is becoming much more specialist sector or to manage. In addition to what Mark said, I also agree this is a positive development. We will see a short-term hiccups, but in addition to what Mark said, I think we are moving from an outdated model that is very passive to something much more dynamic, where the landlord can participate in partnership with operator, understanding the business and really having very transparent approach, because I think it's a very powerful tool to be able to, you know what actually the revenues are of the retailer and be able to manage based on that and reposition, you know, those the scheme or high street based on the data. We mentioned already unaffordable rents, but also thinking about, you know, a building, this passive model where we let a building or a store on a long-term lease to a strong covenant, the return usually is not always that high, and we live in a low interest rate environment, so we investors want to see higher returns. And I think that this business model, operating model, can actually give some boost to returns, which is another positive that maybe hasn't been mentioned so far.
Great, Nadja. Thanks very much. There's a question come in about what percentage of retail and leisure is on turnover rents in the UK at the moment. I don't know if anybody's got any instant answer to that question.
Yeah, I can give some perspective from the Hammerson perspective, which might be, I guess, reflective of general picture. It's still relatively low. When we look at our own income, it's kind of mid to it's mid single digits towards double digits as a total percentage of our income. So predominantly made of base rents. And back to my earlier comment around when we think about resetting rents, and then we think about a performance top up. The majority will be those reset base rents. The performance top up is the kind of boost that goes on top, and I think that's important when, and again, this is where the devil's in the detail with on a sector by sector basis. But when we think about big flagship venues like the Bullring in Birmingham, where brands choose to go there because they absolutely want to connect with their customers, they want a platform from which they can sell online, people to interact with their brand, they may not be as concerned about the level of sales that go through the store, and the OCR might be apparently higher than otherwise you'd think. We've certainly seen that historically. I think when we think about the benefit and the reason that brands take these type of stores, which is say far more than just for selling things through the stores, then having a large proportion of our income as pure turnover, it doesn't feel like a sound base for growing our business.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, that really leads us quite nicely into the next question on the process about what's been said so far really needs an enormous amount of trust between all the parties involved in the transaction. And in an industry which has traditionally been adversarial, is it a pipe dream to expect that to move to a position where it moves into a reality and a proper system, particularly as you've talked about the online sales, etc., and where those might or might not go and with different parties? Nadia, do you want to attempt that question first?
Yeah, sure. So I think this is very much a UK related question where retailers haven't been willing to share the data with landlords. This is very different to some other markets on the in continental Europe, for example, France. I strongly believe that we need to change that, and landlords need to work with retailers, and this data will slowly, become available. I think without that trust and building up, partnership relationship between landlord and the tenant, it won't really work. I strongly believe that this is going to change.
Christian, do you want to add anything to that?
Yes, sure. I think it comes down to the fact that it's, a benefit to all parties here. It's a very tough environment generally out there. If you're, an operator right now, you're having to invest heavily in your online platform. You're also grappling with understanding how the halo effect of your physical or your online affects the other. So to work in partnership, I think, is ultimately the only way through. The physical store will remain completely relevant. I think something like 9 out of 10 retailers are investing more heavily in their click and collect concepts as well. So there is this sort of move towards a greater need to partner, and the operator at the end of the day, the aim is to increase their sales. And as a consequence of that, the owner, having invested heavily in their brand and their schemes, gets the benefit of increased income. So from that point of view, it has to work in partnership. Now, the starting point might be a little bit different, because I think short-term memories might come to the fore as to how retailers or owners feel that they've been treated by the other party in negotiating what's had to be negotiated about when stores were closed. But I think it's certainly positive for moving towards that more working in partnership position.
And do you think that's the case? Obviously, there are different challenges in shopping centres to high streets, where you get multiple owners rather than perhaps a single point for contact. Does that create an additional layer of challenge to that trust?
I think, from our perspective, I think longer term, when we look at, who are the ultimate winners out of all of this, that's why we think that dominant retail and shopping malls and centres still will do very well, because you're in charge of your own destiny, so to speak, and you can work in partnership with your operators who can buy into that, buy into your strategy, get comfortable with that, and that gives them the confidence to also invest. On the high street, it's far more fragmented, and it must be a real frustration as well then for the operators as well, if they don't feel that they're having the customers put in front of their front door, it's suddenly less appealing to be there. So if you're in a market with significant oversupply of retail, you know, it's the high street that's more likely to suffer first.
This also raises the question if we will need some sort of operators or consortiums that will then run, so to say, the high streets where to manage the high street stores. It's an interesting one, and it's a real possibility here.
Yeah, perhaps I'll just respond a couple of quick. I mean, yeah, really interesting point. A couple of follow-ups to me on the trust point. I mean, we are at a. I mean, I've never experienced anything like it. I don't think anyone in this industry, in retail, as an operator or a retail property owner, anything like it in terms of the difficulty and challenges of the conversations. And I think with all things in life, this has been a matter of, you know, seek to understand in order to be understood. And both occupiers and owners are having incredibly difficult conversations. I think it quite paradoxically, those conversations themselves actually build some trust, because we really have had to help each other through this. I mean, I've had all sorts of conversations with, you know, senior level occupiers over the weekends, you know, people who, you know, we're negotiating hard against, but equally there's a kind of, the reason we're all working hard to find solutions is because, you know, we all believe in physical property and having great venues, and we have to work with each other in order to get there. So it's trust is a massive point. We're in a new world. I think there's three points I've made. We're in a new world of negotiation here. The way I've described and the panel have described, you know, this new valuation world, the new operating world has moved us away from a kind of qualitative kind of relationship based, come on mate, here's a deal, this is what the evidence is, are you going to do it type conversation, to a far more quantitative, data driven negotiation between us and the owners, which actually comes back to some quite interesting questions around skill sets for valuers and indeed businesses like Hammerson, because it's all about, I think as Nadia talked about earlier, it's all about understanding the real mechanics of the businesses that we're negotiating with in order to try and find a level of rent that truly reflects what they can afford to pay and reflects a rent that's sufficient to enable us to continue to invest in the property. So really interesting, different type of negotiation. Historically, the heart of that is the willingness of the occupiers to produce their show that, you know, open the books. And again, as Nadia said, that's historically, particularly in the UK, been a challenge. I'm optimistic. I think that all the conversations that we're having, again, with, you know, with all different types of brands, says that there is an appetite for this. I think the occupiers understand that, the brands understand that we have come to a point here where kind of old rules don't apply. We have to think differently and act differently. So I hope and I think that there is more trust that's going to enable some of those occupiers who haven't had to open the books up to do so. The big challenge in all of this is still the supply-demand imbalance in the UK. And even in the best locations where, you know, generally I think it's a more even conversation given the desirability of the space and the fact the brands want to be there. Even then, you know, there is always a cheaper deal that a retailer can get elsewhere right now, always a cheaper deal. And actually the conversations that we're having are, okay, you probably could get that deal, but, you know, let's really think about the future of your business. Let's think of the future of the physical retail property. And if this is a race to the bottom, then yeah, you're gonna have other intos and you're gonna have places that no one wants to invest in. You have to work with us as the owners and the curators of these places and pay rent that is fair for you, but enables the landlord to invest properly. So that kind of second point, the avoiding the race to the bottom and having a kind of longer term strategic conversation with the occupier is absolutely essential. And then the final thing, a point I make on that is in that information exchange, I think some quite interesting interface organizations popping up now. CACI, for instance, are, you know, themselves putting a, have done some really interesting work around on this, around how, you know, could they act as a bit of an honest broker to gather some of the information from occupiers, be able to kind of put it together and interpret that, keeping the really sensitive bit over here, but interpret that as some kind of, in some kind of valuation type trend or evaluation, you know, number value. And then finally, I want to talk about CVAs. I don't want to turn this into a negative conversation, but the trust at certain areas of the retail market right now are abusing CVAs. Well, not just retail, the market. I think CVAs fundamentally are there. They're a good thing. If done properly, they're accelerating a kind of survival of the fittest. We generally find at Hammerson, we benefit from the fact that, you know, the aftermath of the CVA, the brand's still trading with us, paying a reasonable rent. But there's certainly abuses coming through, and where people are putting CVAs in order to pay less than they can afford to pay. And that's fundamentally breaking down the trust. And again, that's a UK issue right now. And we see, certainly when I look at Ireland and our business in Ireland and France, where you haven't got that similar type of legislation, we don't see that. So it's a really fine relationship. Trust is a kind of really hard-earned and easily lost thing. And we're all working incredibly hard to try and build it in order to, you know, take this industry forward.
Thanks, Mark. It's just really interesting comments there. One thought that just came into my brain while you were all talking there. I just wonder whether the sort of move to less cash in society, a cashless society, will improve this transfer of information, because more of the records will be digitally held rather than transaction based.
I mean, you would hope so, because one of the benefits that I outlined is the fact that you can assess the performance of the operator faster and sooner and quicker. That kind of falls away if you're still having a lag, or you're only declaring your turnover on an annual basis or a quarterly basis. I mean, some markets and some businesses already have that technology in their tills, so they can actually track what a particular operator is doing in sort of live time. So an example of that out in Dubai with Emaar, I believe that they're able to do that. And that's got to be where you would want to get to. And I think, you know, digital transactions instead of cash is obviously going to help towards that. But just coming back to something that Mark mentioned, if I may, which is just, you know, when we look at that CVA structure that he mentioned, which is a very UK specific thing, one of the challenges that I see is you know, European values have held up relatively firm compared to what's happened in the UK market, the US market. The US is mostly supply demand driven, and the UK has always been felt that occupation costs got too high, but that it was quite easy to, you know, come up with or go into CVA and reduce your income potential. So, you know, on the European model, where you have far more on an affordability basis anyway, where the rents generally are right-sized and are tracked unit by unit, size, type of operation, trying to get the mix right, you know, it's already more complex as a view. So, you know, that old model of tone, rental tone, I think is something that is to be consigned to history, really, and it needs to be more deep dive, and the technology part of that's going to be crucial.
It was mentioned already, occupational cost in the UK that is much higher in comparison to the continent, and really what contributes to this is the UK rates, the property tax. It's been, we're now in the rates free period until March, but then, you know, when, if this is reinstalled, this will again push the costs up and obviously rents down. So we really need a long-term solutions here, and you know, more probably raise government awareness and to come up with some solution, because, you know, UK market needs to be competitive globally.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Don't get me started on rates, Nigel. This is a family show. But if I can just come back to Ben's point on digitalization and Christian's response, I think this is, you know, when we think about the level of base rent, we then think about performance top up. And actually, we look at our own research as to how we're starting to track spend and performance. I mean, it's becoming increasingly digital, and I think that's enabling both us and indeed the occupiers, particularly the retailers, who themselves just haven't, I think, for some time. There's very few of them who've really got to grips with, you know, this question of what's the value of the physical space, and how do you attribute a value to that space? The elements they know are it's good for, like the halo effect online, like levels of click and collect. The fulfillment that might take place, the buying that might take place in the vicinity of a store on a mobile device, all those things that if you think about what Amazon knows about its customer, and you know we are in the, I mean it's prehistoric when you think about how physical property owners and actually physical retailers understand their customers. The only time they understand their customers is when they come to a till and they transact, and if they're lucky enough to have some sort of club card that means they know who they are. But that's changing, and I'm really optimistic about our ability then to have more and more transparency on just how people shop, for us and the occupiers to understand, you know, the benefit of the cause effect between having a store and what that impact is on online sales. A lot of thought going into it right now from some really smart people, and this is coming together in a way I think is early days, but I think is gives a source for optimism. Really interesting though, you know, you come back to the principles of valuation, and a big question I think for this panel to ask is the valuation industry then ready to value assets that are likely to be, you know, the income and the value of which is dependent on these things that we didn't even heard of 5-10 years ago.
Again, really, really challenging questions, and the way that real estate is operating more and more like a business and a business valuation is going to be really quite challenging to the traditional real estate professionals.
I was going to say just on that point, so the role of a retail valuer has shifted very, very quickly. I mean, everything has moved. In any event, you know, at the one end, you know, we're saying about the need to be far more of a retail specialist. You need data, you need benchmarks. You know, we ourselves are leaning far more heavily on our research and agency colleagues than ever before, because, you know, it's no longer about rental tone. It is about affordability. It's about understanding the nature of the retailers better. It's also about understanding the nature of the owner better as well. And increasingly, there are more and more outside influences as well. So on the one hand, you've got to be a retail specialist. On the other hand, you need other skill sets as well, because we're moving into a more operational model that's made even more complex. Because if you think about senior living or hotels, you're talking about an operator and an operation model. Here, you're talking about potentially an owner who is operating a shopping center and then hundreds of retailers that all have their own business plans. So, you know, it's even more challenging from that perspective.
Thank you, Christian. Nadja, do you want to add anything to that?
I guess it's just that that valuers, the trade is completely changing. It's more about, you know, understanding, again, the operational businesses and models, and much more intensive in the way understanding the data and the statistics. So I think the valuation industry is going to change dramatically.
I guess also, I mean, the sort of consequences of all this as well are sort of boundless, in that it will move into the tax arena and all sorts of opportunities to actually be much more focused on the efficiency and the returns for a particular investment and the data which underpins that. So quite an exciting world that we're probably moving into. It sort of perhaps realigns all the risks, the traditional risks that we're so used to adding up. I wonder whether the panel have got any thoughts or comments on how you see that realignment of risks, and particularly the costs associated with those risks. Perhaps Nadja could pick that one up first of all.
I guess we're going back to that old model where we had a tenant on a long-term lease, good covenant, and let's say the lease is signed for 20 years, we have CPI linkage and all that, and 2 or 3 years down the line, the tenant cannot pay the rent. So what is the value of that lease? How risky is that proposition? If you now compare it to a proposition where you have a retailer that on a monthly or quarterly basis, you know exactly what they're making in revenues, or you have 10 retailers and you know each of them, what they're making in revenues on a monthly or quarterly basis, you can then decide which retailer you want to keep, which retailer you ending your agreement with. It's just much more, I don't know, collaborative process, much more dynamic, and there's a lot of flexibility in this model. What is more risky? For me, I think it's much more exciting and less risky to have this operational business model, but it just comes with more engagement and, you know, skill set, understanding of the businesses. So, and that's why it's much more exciting in a way than this passive, you know, rental model.
Thanks, Nadia. Christian?
Yeah, I was sort of thinking about, because we were sort of challenging ourselves internally, actually, about, you know, moving towards an operational model and, you know, is there a tipping point in terms of, you know, if you move to a more operational model? So when we look across Europe at a sort of more stable level of performance, occupationally, rental levels seem less under pressure as well. The level of turnover, although turnover leases form a great majority of the leases, the actual turnover income is relatively low. You then look at the outlet malls, which have always been having a, you know, turnover element to that. They've become institutional as well. So we haven't seen this sort of outward yield movement really for that, for the risk. Now, there might be a form of tipping point where yields would move up because it becomes a more operational model. Then you could argue that a shopping centre is far more diversified from that risk profile than, say, a hotel could be. So, you know, we're looking at the risk like that. And I agree, you know, with the previous comment that, you know, and talking to lenders as well, that actually a long lease on a fixed rent is actually potentially considered more risky and less stable today than on an operational model. So we don't see the risk, you know, of going down this route. And we're talking about for the better schemes, because obviously more challenged assets will, you know, that polarization will take effect. But we don't see there's necessarily being a need to correct prices by going to an operational model.
Thanks, Christian.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not a couple of comments. I'm not too much to add really to those very valid points. Yeah, fundamentally, the establishing an income stream and demonstrating the solidity of that income stream will evidently improve risk. And we look at, I think when you look at what's happened in the premium outlets business in Europe over the last 10, 15 years, Christian probably know this better than I do, but they started out in the early days, you know, as being kind of double digit yield profiles on these things as the kind of income was established. But as it's established, those yields have come into, you know, 5-6% for the best location. So I guess that's the market talking about risk. A couple of other points. One is, I think the risk is also going to be mitigated in the type of operator. You know, clearly we in our investment in Value Retail and the investment that we just sold out of Via, it was building up that operator credibility and demonstrating the ability to run a business that delivers this income. In the same way as at Hammerson, with a kind of pretty expert platform of really diverse, interesting, different people with lots of different skills who are able to really make these places tick. That is certainly a risk mitigator, I think, for anyone investing in this sector. And then finally, from a venue perspective, you know, the fundamentals of property, I mean, I'm picking up on really both Christian's and Nadia's comments, fundamentals of property about location, great accessible location, you know, adjacencies are, you know, great adjacencies of complementary uses, ability to develop complementary uses, you know, all play into the risk considerations of someone looking to invest in the space of retail property.
Thanks, Mark, and thanks, everybody. It just triggers another sort of thought in my brain is that if we move to this more digital process and more time-sensitive process, it would actually probably change the issues around IFRS and fair value and the actual level of evidence that, that might be used in financial reporting for real estate companies, if we could really crack that that problem. Can I just ask, particularly Nadja and Mark, you guys commission valuations. Is there anything in a valuation report that you would like to see which would help you make your decisions?
We touched bases on this. We always say in the UK, valuation is not a science, it's an art. Which is an interesting one, and I wonder if we're coming to that point where this may, change. In terms of valuation standards, we've been talking a lot about this and how to have, a common standard that is applicable not only for the euro by more standards across the globe. If you look at the yields, when we talk about yields, they're not really comparable, and equally rents, and so there's a lot of good work that has been done where these have been brought to more kind of common denominators, but there's definitely much more to do. So what would be looking from valuations definitely need more of a common standards, common ground, comparisons that makes investors' lives much easier. And then linking to the discussion, it's the cash flows driven valuation, DCF methods, valuation of operational businesses, understanding the operators' specialist skill set of this, and the whole layer of risks or costs that would feed into these models. And we need benchmarks for almost each of these, or some sort of comparables. And this is the only way then to actually evaluate, the different business propositions or investment propositions.
Yeah. Okay. So look, I mean, we're clearly a public company. We rely very heavily on our valuations, and more importantly, our investors rely very heavily on the public markets on our valuations. In terms of the content of the report, I mean, it's an interesting question, and probably Christian's far better positioned to answer this for me. I'm probably a bit technical with this one for me, Ben, but I'll give it a go. There's a lot of, clearly there's a very transparent information exchange, and we have a fully open book, transparent approach to all the information around all of our properties is passed over to the valuers. And in return, we get a pretty transparent answer back as to how that's translated into value. That enables both our auditors and our directors ultimately to sign off, directors sign off the account, and the auditors sign off the accounts based on these valuations. So, I mean, that's a kind of really primary purpose of these valuations in the context of a public company. I think it's probably two. So the one question you've asked is, well, could there be further information to enable us to make decisions? Clearly, as when we're considering any investments, developments, proposal, and considering how we allocate capital, and clearly the valuer's view on it is really important. How the valuer sees it, how they will see it once it's built, and that's clearly an integral part of the decision making for behind any one of our valuations. I think probably the bigger question is, the general public confidence in those valuations is clearly something that's been well written about. If you look historically at the disconnect between, many propcos, and particularly those like ours invested in retail property, the disconnect between our NA value, our NAV, and the market cap, then clearly there's an underlying issue around the confidence in those valuations. So there's certainly something in the what the valuation industry can do to kind of demonstrate and give that confidence, and we as propcos can do to give that confidence. We've been increasingly transparent in our disclosures over the past few years in how we talk about business and what we how we talk about our business with our investors. And I think there is there a role for the valuers in assisting more in that possibly? Yeah, almost certainly, because but back to the first point and the whole purpose behind this debate, I think the key to it is demonstrating that ultimately these the rents and the underlying income coming out of these schemes is sustainable and has the ability to grow. And I think once that we've hit that point, and I think we're now on the right track to get there, then I think the sort of question you're asking is always been an interesting one, but it's not the key question, which is the confidence that disconnect between the valuations and what the public and the markets evidently believe.
Christian, as a provider, how do you respond to those challenges?
Well, I mean, so the main challenge, as we're outlining, is that need for data, that need for understanding of businesses. So, you know, we need our clients to open up their books as best as possible in the sense of us being able to be more scientific and less of an art form when it comes to analysing income and rental values and what they should be. So the approach does need to be more granular and more scientific. And the people that understand the assets best are obviously the people that live and breathe those assets on a daily basis. So, we need to be sort of closer, if you like, in a way to that knowledge and understanding of how the retailers are performing and the objectives of the owner, whilst maintaining the independence that's required as a valuer as well. In terms of that information flow that Mark alluded to, you know, that's absolutely vital in everything we do. And it comes back to the methodology point. I think everything, you know, we're being asked about today in a fast moving market is forward looking, and it's about the future and it's about forecasting. And I think we've been fixated on fair value and market value being as at the valuation date today, assuming a marketing period. And actually there's more interest in what do we see the future, which is actually through a cash flow informing our view of the value as at today. So I think there needs to be a sort of greater understanding around forecasting. And I think, you know, there are papers such as the, you know, long-term sustainable value and sort of looking into that more as well. But I think for us to help give advice and to support as valuers our clients as best as possible, it's also to be able to support with that forward look as well, and not just focusing in on that snapshot at that one moment in time in what is a very fast moving sector.
Thanks, Christian. Just one eye on the chat box down the side, and there seem to be a number of comments whereby certain countries have been collecting this data for quite a long time, but they're still finding challenges around understanding it between the parties and service charges and how they're constructed, etc. So the sort of granularity of this challenge is probably something that we need to focus in on, so that people can make the right calls at the right time. Can I just go around the group and sort of say, what do you think is going to happen in the next 12 months, 24 months? What is the big change that will happen due to the pandemic?
Yeah, sure. So we will see much more specialist operators, managers of retail schemes, and even high street, as I said, like more consortiums. Valuations will move and value the businesses, operational businesses. We will see also more joint ventures between, you know, investors and operators. Probably much more redevelopments and rejuvenation residential schemes, just because, you know, we have a lot of shopping schemes that have to be repurposed. You know, we will really see much more flexible turnover leases, but also it will be much clearer which shopping destinations will prevail and those that will fall out.
Thank you. Mark?
Five things. There's going to be acceleration of the rebasing of rents to the right level. There'll be acceleration of polarization, and the winners will really emerge out of this. The rise of the specialist operator, and you're already seeing that it's happening, particularly, you know, some of the fallout from the Into administration, the specialist operators who are getting hold of some of these things, acceleration of mixed use repurposing to Nadia's point. I'm going to finish with a real optimistic wish, which is we'll see, you know, a realignment to reasonable levels of rates in the UK.
Great. Thank you, Mark. And Christian, as soon as you've kicked us off in the first place, last word on this to you.
Okay, so I think, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. So this move to turnover rents, I think, will take a little bit of time to come through. And I think, in effect, if you're looking at a turnover-based model based on income next year, you probably have a rebase right there. So you can get from that point the growth that we would all want in performance come through in the markets. What I'd expect to also see then is that the falling sword of UK retail just stops, that we get to that base point, so we can start to see the better schemes performing as we expect them to do, which is best in class. The schemes at the other end, the more secondary and challenged assets, I think we'll see an increase in repurposing and redevelopment. I think for a long period of time now, there's been a very big sticking plaster on some failing schemes to just try and preserve the income. If you move to a more flexible lease structure on those schemes, where the balance of power will be very much with the occupier, then I see that what was borderline for redevelopment is now actually a viable redevelopment place. So you'll get some renewal, much needed renewal in urban locations as well coming through. And then if you sort of forward that, you know, the big disconnect at the moment between sort of UK, US markets and continental European markets, focus on the UK. If you address that concern around underwriting my NOI, what is that true level, then you get the yield hardening again. And that disconnect that you see at the moment between UK and the rest of the markets, that should reduce back to more normal level.
I think combined with the return to liquidity for UK market as well, Christian, I think is clearly the will be the welcome outcome of this rebate.
That's great. Thank you all very much. I guess it sort of it just leaves to conclude. But thanks, my thanks to the panel. Really great discussion.